Commissioner Demarest.
Here.
Commissioner Christensen.
Present.
Commissioner Rodland.
Here.
Commissioner Sherwood.
Here.
Thank you. Now, this is the time where we take comments from citizens, and since there is no one in the audience, we will move on. We have approval of minutes. First one up is September 12, 2011. Commissioners, any comments?
I have one.
Dave?
Page 2 of 3, the paragraph immediately above item B, city-initiated applications, where I made the motion to reconsider the previously passed motion to close public testimony. Do we want to say what the, how come that motion was? I mean, you say it passed, but do we want to say it was for the purpose of continuing the public testimony to our next meeting? Or just so it's not kind of a dangling question. And that's what I think it was, Kim, if I recollect right. It was just a continuation to either the next meeting or the meeting after that.
It was, I think, to the next meeting.
Sure, I'll have that in there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Anyone else? And I would entertain a motion to approve the meetings of September 12, 2011.
I'll make a motion to approve them with that one noted correction.
Motion made by Commissioner Demarest, seconded by Commissioner Christensen. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. The next one is September 26, 2011. Commissioners, any comments?
I am.
Bill?
On page 3 of 5, Tom Williams' statement, the last sentence was, he would like to see this item docketed as it would improve,
period.
So, I think there's something missing at the end of that.
Okay, I'll check on that.
Okay, thank you.
Dave?
Page 105, Mr. Berger's comment at the bottom. I don't recall him saying that he owned property south of the proposal. I can't for the life of me figure out what it would be that he would own.
He owns a warehouse in the industrial park.
Oh, the Doug across mm-hmm. Highway 2.
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Well, then I guess I would entertain a motion to approve with the revision that will be made. Well, I don't know if we'll be able to see the revision. Commissioners, any opinions on that?
I suspect it's a fairly minor revision and won't change the, speaking to Mr. Williams' comment.
Correct.
Yeah.
Bill's question on that.
I have no problem with that. Anyone else have any issues with that? Then I'll entertain a motion to approve with the forthcoming revision.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Rodman. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, next is November 14th, 2011. Commissioners, any comments? Okay, seeing no hands, I will entertain a motion to approve the minutes of November 14th, 2011.
I'll be happy to make that motion if they be approved as written. Minutes of November 14th.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Demarest, seconded by Commissioner Christensen. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? All right. And lastly, November 28, 2011. Any comments, revisions, concerns? I will entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll make the motion to approve.
I'll second.
All right, motion made by Commissioner Rodland, seconded by Commissioner Demarest. Any further discussion? Mm-hmm. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Okay, we have no public hearing, so our next item is our workshop. This will be CPA 2012-01 First Airfield, and that will be handled by Paul Popalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to spend just a little bit of time on the First Air project. I had originally intended to bring quite a bit more in terms of staff report on the First Air. I'm going to do a pretty thorough discussion of the project, but we ran out of time. So what I've done in terms of the staff report, you can see, was to really just to list the criteria that we're going to be putting together in a staff report for you to review the next time we bring this forward. But tonight I do have a few slides to revisit this, kind of reintroduce it. We've been through these things before for the most part, but I think this will bring us all current in 2012, and we haven't met for several weeks. And we can go through this First Air project as a quick review, and then discuss really how we're going to proceed from there and what some of the issues are that we're going to be trying to get some more information on, and which will help lead us towards some kind of a decision for recommendation. I'm sure you recall, this is where the property is at, that is in this proposal to rezone to limited airport open space, limited open space airport, pardon me. Actually, part of this process will be to define LOSA and the comprehensive plan, since it does not exist today for some logical reason, I'm sure. But the left side has the existing, the right side, the proposed. The only change is in this area here and in a couple of very small parcels. I'm getting down a little bit of dice here. A couple of very small parcels right in here. As well, yeah, that's right. That's about it for this reclassification of the land use to LOSA. The applicants are proposing primarily to extend this runway to open it up for more possible commercial use by commercial pilots and to improve the safety margins that are really unsatisfactory at this point. And they've also had discussions about other related facilities that we've talked about. And the applicant is interested in coming in and making a presentation to the commission. And we can talk about that toward the end. We have a little discussion about future agenda items in terms of timing of our review with this, and when we think it would be a good time to bring the applicant in for a presentation, which could be any time. And they're very interested in sharing some information with you. You may also recall the changes that might come about with this runway expansion. There's a unresolved issue that I talked to the Dan Reina today, who's the applicant, about these zones, and the discussion was that the touchdown point for landing is going to remain the same. It's, you know, somewhere in this area for airplane traffic that comes mostly from the east into the prevailing winds. So the touchdown point will not change, which may or may not affect how these zones may be extended in the lower diagram, where 1, 2, 3, and 4 are moved, you know, in the range of 1,000 feet or several hundred feet farther west. My initial thinking and reading of the code was that these zones are defined from the quote end of the runway, but there are some other considerations for how you measure from the usable area of the runway. So we're going to see if we can get some better information on just exactly what that all means. But there's, and bear in mind that from this point west does not apply, since that's in the county. And the city is actually free to do with this whatever we like. We can completely throw them away. Or change the standards, or we might possibly leave it the way it is. Now, there are some, I was looking at this earlier, there are some differences between these. On the top one, if you look where the block plan is here, that gets extended quite a bit further west with this two zone. However, the number one zone comes farther west as well. Where am I here? In that that proposed runway, it takes in the I think there's a Shell station. Is that at Shell McDonald's on the southeasterly corner of two and Frylands? It which precludes virtually any sort of residential, very little development. It does, however, take the Lake Tai building out of the picture from existing two proposals. Right now, half of Lake Tai is in Zone 3. Under the new scheme, the building is completely out. But it does impact the block plan. It's entirely within Zone 2, whereas now only a portion of it is.
Well, you say that the Lake Tai building comes completely out, but it looks to me like it's still in Zone 3.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong building. Yes.
Lake Tai right here.
Yes. Lake Tai is totally within Zone 3 now, and this extension would take out part of it right now. I'm looking at the wrong building. So there are some, you know, minor iterations from one to the other, or differences between one and the other. But one thing I will do is confirm whether this runway extension automatically does extend this far. And when I talk about future agenda items, there's something I want to talk to you about, this overlay zone, in terms of a notice that we have to send out, which will involve the change in zone code. More on that later.
The change on Zone 1, the difference between Zone 1 and Zone 2 is pretty significant, isn't it, as far as allowed uses?
It is on the south, in terms of allowed uses?
In Zone 1 versus Zone 2.
It is. Neither one allows residential.
Right.
And I didn't bring my cheat sheet with me for the allowed density. But Zone 1 basically precludes about or prohibits virtually any sort of development. Zone 2 is a little more lenient.
Maybe this is going to be a question that Commissioner Sherwood can respond to. Would taking that McShell, whatever it's called, McChevron, maybe
McChevron.
McShell.
Yeah.
I knew it didn't sound quite right. Is that going to impact value of their property, the saleability of their property, in a negative way that could come back and haunt the city? I don't know. Perhaps Mr. Sherwood would have an opinion on that, as you might.
I think the biggest issue would be if there was some destruction of the property, whether it be, it's probably the highest and best use is improved for another 20, 30 years, maybe. But in cases where there's destruction of improvements greater than 50% of the assessed value,
situation.
You may have a situation where that could not be rebuilt the way it is today because of that overlay being moved to improve. That certainly is a real possibility.
Thank you.
Paul, I got a question on, I don't want to derail where you're going, but I think one thing I'd like to discuss, and maybe not at this moment, would be, you know, like you said, we could abolish this altogether, and my thought, and probably repeating myself, is dealing more with height restrictions and occupancy restrictions and what that means, and maybe that's a question for when the applicant comes in to answer our questions.
The next workshop will bring and put in the packet the information, the detailed information about what can be done within each zone. It's a pretty simple table. And also some information about height restrictions.
Okay.
we'll come back and revisit this certainly. Now, in terms of wetlands and environmental impacts, most of the property is under a category 2, I believe it is, wetland. There are several streams through the property. Some of these streams have been pretty well compromised in terms of degraded and straightened and so forth. But this runway extension will obviously include some taking of wetlands. And the applicant is proposing to mitigate that by trading wetland area, perhaps trading land in this you can't really see it on the screen, but the rectangle above where it says First Air Field going north, trading land in that area to offset the loss of wetlands in the area to the west. And that would really need to be an equivalent trade in terms of the quality of the wetlands, and of course there's a mitigation ratio of 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 acres to 1 for mitigation, depending on what category it's in. And they also, I think, propose to do some stream restoration, which would be part of that package. We have not completed a SEPA determination on this. That'll be done before this comes back again. But it looks like I'm headed for a determination for mitigated determination of non-significance. Obviously, there are some impacts, but they appear to be impacts that can be pretty reasonably mitigated, which would set the stage for the SEPA determination for that. There may be other impacts that come out after I do this more complete review on the checklist for that determination. That's the direction we're headed at this point.
Jeff, has anybody within the city limits bought a credit from Dave Rillinger's mitigation bank, the Academy Holdings property on the Scott Coleman River, this below the prison? Has anybody bought a credit there to mitigate anything within the city limits? It's in the same watershed. I'm just curious if that option would be available to these people if it proved to be an economical option. You know, we might have to weigh that, because I'm pretty sure that as long as you're in the same watershed, sometimes they allow it outside, but it's normally you have to be in the same watershed. And I believe this would be considered, that's on the other side, that's on the Sky, and this goes into the Snohomish directly. I think it's considered one system. I wonder if that would be, because a lot of these, obviously, you can tell by their shapes that they're old ditches. And I'd say that these are pretty low value wetlands. And I wonder if that might be an option that would give them some flexibility,
right,
as far as design and placement of fill and the sorts of things that they're going to have to do to bring this to fruition.
I think it would be an option. I'm not sure about the economic feasibility of it, if it's feasible for them to purchase those credits from Rembrandt. We did have a couple of inquiries from residents up in that northeast corner over the last couple of months. Where'd it go? Yeah, it's not showing up on the screen. The very northeast corner within the city limits up there, there was one lot that I don't recall the size, the full size of the lot, but there was a very, very small corner of that lot in the southeast corner that could be built on. And the owners were very surprised that there was so little that they could do with it. I think they wanted to build a fairly large house. And our advice to them was, well, you can you can bill within this small area, then you'll have to, or you could potentially find some way to mitigate some other action on that, but it's basically an undevelopable piece of ground. The quality of the wetlands is another question. I'm not sure that these are very high quality. There are some areas where there's some invasive grasses and so forth. But again, I think that needs to be determined, and then the ratio of mitigation or what it is that they need to credit with can be determined as well. And whether that's on site or off site, I don't think makes a difference.
Well, I don't know about the quality of it, though. It seems to me that if for no other reason than the size of it, that's going to, doesn't that contribute some to the quality of a wetland and its function? And certainly it's a large area. I'm curious, the west end of the proposal, not infrequently have I seen that all acting as stormwater storage and standing water out there. And I don't see that mentioned in the environmental review at all. And I think we talked about it previously. It seems that I've been told there's a fish blockage there at Highway 2, but I seem to remember somewhere that I've seen indicators that there's fish up in there. And they say there's no fish in their review, their checklist.
Hmm.
Jeff, you
mentioned. I know fish come up to the end of our cul-de-sac.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You're right. The salmon come
they get up in there all the time.
Do they?
Matter of fact, yeah, Jeff's had neighbors' houses that have been talked about. They've shown pictures of the, is it Silvers? Right off the end of 136, and that would clearly come up through Cripple Creek. I think it is. So, no, you're absolutely right, Jeff. Fish do get up there. And, yeah, there's no fish or not.
Is that turning into French Creek?
Yes, it does.
Cripple eventually becomes a trench. Okay, they come together, they coalesce up and down. One of the issues that is probably going to come up here is if there is any kind of a wetland mitigation in this area that results in the creation of a significant amount of open water, you may have a bird-airplane conflict, which has obviously been impressed quite a bit lately. That would got to be one reason to avoid going too far on wetland mitigation here. And it could be a requirement on the FAA's part that you can't create open water anymore than already exists.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just like your little birdie. You know. So probably that would be one reason perhaps to mitigate off-site just from a practical standpoint.
So you wouldn't have any personal knowledge of bird habitation on here, bird populations?
Well, there's a relatively good size blue heron, ripplewheat, right off the 136 place there.
Hmm.
20 to 30 masses on the south side of the
Paul,
the area that Jeff was mentioning as far as fishing, you know what he's talking about there?
Yeah, basically.
It's really just at the end of 136.
Mm-hmm.
The stream that goes just west of the end of the runway, as it's shown on this diagram, if you follow it straight up, there's two branches that go around the three houses or at the end of the cul-de-sac, and both of those branches carry fish. And I know Marvin Burstay, who is north of the cul-de-sac, he's had 50 fish in a puddle during a flooding event in his backyard. So they find a way.
I guess there's no fish blockage.
Not to their regulation.
Apparently not.
Yes.
And there's ducks. There's ducks in those ponds too. And I know because I got a dent in my wing of my airplane. They fly fast.
He got a bigger dip.
Better a duck than a deer.
Yeah.
We're doing a good job of interrupting your presentation.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. This is fine.
Since we're interrupting know, they're talking about adding this definition, a 16th, the limited open space airport. They had a definition in their submittal. Does that definition carry any weight, or is that just something they suggested? This designation shall provide for airport and other uses that support making First Air Field an economically viable airport. That's on page 4 of 7.
It's a little light.
So that's just something they recommended. So
right.
Staff is going to write.
Yes. Yes. We'll look for some other similar, couple other similar examples, but I think it needs to be enough to define the purpose and the intent of this land use. We won't get into zoning issues with that, but just what is this about? So it can be judged as to whether it's appropriate. Okay, I think some of these will be good questions to ask of the applicant. And I think Dan Reina and Rick Heath from Harmson, and I would guess Daryl would also be here as a part of that group. It would be good to get some information. So, some of these we've talked about in the past as well. I mean, I know the commission, and I also would like to do some form of outreach on this project. I think there may be more people than just the immediate neighbors that are interested in what happened with this. So, before we have a public hearing, when we get to that point, prior to that point, we need to have some interaction with the public in terms of some meetings out there, a couple of meetings out there somewhere. Maybe we could do something at the airport itself, or we'll find some kind of facility, but I'd like to do at least one that's not here at City Hall, that is removed from City Hall in a little more comfortable setting, to see what kind of interest we can generate.
Since this is a citizen-initiated application, in the past when we've had city-initiated applications, we've done that. We've set it up, posted it, provided the content, and provided the structure. But if being a citizen-initiated application, should maybe the can the city condition or require the applicant to host such a meeting, and we would be a participant in that meeting, and they would be the ones who would really be making the presentation, providing the information, and then the public, as well as us, perhaps, would be there to not only listen, but to also ask questions and get responses. And would that make more sense rather than having the city try to put this on?
Yes, I would prefer, and I really intended to get the applicant to, I'm not sure they'll agree to do this, to hold public meeting, but I would like the applicant to be the lead and do the majority of the presentation. And because I wrote some neighborhood meeting code in Arizona where we required applicants to hold serve the neighborhood meeting depending on the project. And the role of the city was not to facilitate and not to offer any opinions. We could offer facts. So I said, what's the zoning on this property? You could offer that. But it did not become a forum for any city staff to get involved in trying to make projections or speculation about what might happen with the project. But it was a good way to get the applicant and the neighbors or interested people talking to each other. And I'd like to do the same thing here, is to just take a kind of a back seat in terms of the actual meeting and the function of it, and let the applicant take both the credit and the heat.
Commissioners, any other opinions on that? Bill? Jeff?
No.
Wayne? I personally like that idea.
I'd like to put something together eventually for Monroe as well. Though it's difficult to determine how far we go with requirements. Neighborhood meetings are not necessarily a normal part of the process here, and it really depends on the project. But I would like every applicant to make some effort toward resolving issues with neighbors before it gets to this dais in a formal hearing setting at the very least. Certainly, and we can participate in or hope to resolve issues during a series of workshops. But I would prefer, ideally, that there's some kind of consensus. This happened in the past on certain projects, but some kind of consensus between different parties before it gets to the decision makers, the recommenders and the decision makers. Well, that's ideal, but the effort needs to be made in any case.
So, Paul, you have worked closer with the applicant than at least I have, probably most of us. Do you think that that's something they will be open to, is having kind of hosting an informative?
Well, I think so.
Meeting?
It's for their benefit, certainly. And doing one fairly soon and seeing what kind of interest it generates will give us a pretty good clue on how interested people might be. But there would need to be some, you know, some advertising, some sort of done by the applicant. I don't think the city wants to take on the expense of trying to do an expensive noticing procedure. But to get the word out and give people a chance to hear some information and speak in a fairly informal setting. If I were a regular citizen sitting in this room, I would feel just a little uncomfortable. Some people would, I think. If we can do it in a very informal setting, that just encourages some conversation, I think we can get a lot better results. But I will definitely talk to them about that, and I think the sooner the better.
Thank you, Dave.
And all this is going to happen in the next 5 months or so.
Oh, yes.
Second quarter.
Yes.
I have two other things. I don't know if you want to wrap up your comments, Paul, before I go there.
Please.
Clarification on one hand. In looking at I underlined a remark, a comment on the first page of Appendix 3, which is the CEQA checklist. And the comment that Ms. made right between number 7 and number 8 toward the bottom of that page says the future phases are listed above will undergo environmental review due to future projects submittal. And in particular, there's 3 major phases after the one that we're currently in, that'd be phase 2, 3, and 4, as I see it. Each of those individual phases will require a CEQA checklist, is that what I understand?
And yes, that would be correct. Yes. Which may or may not generate a determination of significance.
Okay.
Or mitigated version. Or none. But those are, you know, those would be project actions.
Right. Okay.
The second that would definitely generate another CEQA process.
At the very least a checklist, and it would be determined that it was adequately addressed in the original environmental determination, no further action
right.
necessary. But at least it would be a chance that it would come up to be looked at again. Okay.
Yes.
My other issue really is more just a general comment, and it doesn't go to pros or cons of this proposal, but rather how this, if this comprehensive plan then moves forward, how it's written. We recently saw the results of loosely written planning guides. To paraphrase a certain judge in Superior Court of San Chicano. And based on there being a certain degree of looseness or flexibility in the comp plan language, there was a use allowed that at the time of the adoption of the comp plan, subarea plan, really wasn't a desired outcome. And yet, because it was loose enough or broad enough, flexible enough, discretion to do with it as they basically wish. And my concern in raising that here is that this is a pretty broad proposal as far as the definition of limited open space airport as it relates to First Airfield and these future uses, to where it's talking about man caves, restaurant, hotel, NASCAR shops, a paddock, many of which aren't really necessarily associated with the airport. And what if they go through all this and they do the expansion of the airport, and lo and behold, it just doesn't pencil out 5-10 years from now, and the airport shuts down? I don't want to see us with a loose enough plan to where they're able to go forward and turn it into an industrial park. I think that'd be very unfortunate. And I think that these are comments that apply to any subway plans or comp plan amendment that we're looking at when it comes to a specific type of land use. It can come back and bite us. And, you know, I think it's, if the system or the desire is such 5 years, 10 years down the road from an action such as this, that someone says, you know, this isn't working, we want to go back in and amend the comp plan and do this with the property, great. We have a process to do that. If, however, that language is loose enough to where they say, well, we don't need to do that, we can just go forward and it's okay, then I think we fail. And I just, I hope to keep that in mind as we go forward and formulate a recommendation. And it's on the positive side.
Because if I remember correctly, part of the scope of this process was to create a definition for LOSA.
Yes,
because right now there really isn't.
The company.
So, yeah, that's definitely.
But clearly,
something to consider, keep in mind.
Clearly, a NASCAR paddock or mechanic shops are not uses normally to have one associated with an airport. So it's already to get go, but in my opinion, it's a pretty broad approach.
I
mean,
just to be careful. I
yes.
speak in this manner that I think the broader the better, because when you narrow down and tell someone who wants to develop a property, you narrow the number of economic uses, you, to that extent, jeopardize the potential viability of the project. Times change. It's the same thing we're looking at this rezone up on Roosevelt Road. At one point, 2 to 4 acres is not a good, but then, we don't have enough houses in the rural. We better go 5 to 7 or 5 to 6, whatever the designation is in the comp plan. So things change. And I think that there's enough scrutiny in the process after our actions that I don't think an undesirable result will occur on this property. For instance, you bring up the NASCAR paddocks. They obviously don't have the room for the fairgrounds. Now that brings some viability. It brings another use that helps the economic potential of this project. So I think I want to avoid being so narrow that we basically force this thing not to be viable. Because after all, we're talking about the viability of the airport. If we then take actions that really, really restrict usage, then we have countered our own actions in trying to make it viable. So I would just, that would be my recommendation, is that we have some flexibility that would allow them, because after all, part of what we're trying to do here is help this thing be viable. And to the extent that we narrow the uses, we narrow the chances of its viability.
Dave?
Sure, I'll respond very good. I'm not suggesting that we narrow the uses that we propose. I'm just saying that if, as part of the future use of property, therefore, over the way, it would be able to check.
I agree, and I think there's enough process in place. And I think you're right. If the change was going to be gross enough, then it would come back through this process.
Right? For further analysis.
Yes, and that was on my mind just as Jeff and David were talking. The applicant is going to be bringing forth the rezoning at some point during this process so that they go forward somewhat together, the comp plan amendment and the zoning. So the definition for in the comp plan for LOSA needs to be enough to, let's say, describe the purpose and the intent of that land use, but then in a almost simultaneous effort, that needs to be defined in the zoning code, and it's a perfect time to really look to zero in on that zoning code and define uses that would be allowed in this LOSA and what the zoning restrictions might be, so we can tailor it to fit whatever we think is appropriate, which will get us to that secondary level where we're getting into the actual uses.
Much as we did with the West Main Street Corridor.
Mm-hmm.
We developed those bulk standards as a part of the comprehensive planning process. And then once the comp plan was in, the comp approved the amendment, we moved forward and moved right on the rezone, almost concurrently.
May I also throw out an idea then also of in our definition, and of course we haven't even gotten that far, get kind of ahead, but possibly wording it in such a way that if there's no longer an airport, that the designation and zoning was ending to change before further development, is that even possible?
Well, I think the airport, the loss of definition would need to include, would be pretty specific that it's airport related. And if the airport goes defunct, there would be a limit on the number of uses that could come into that property. So chances are they would have to amend the land use, amend the comp plan. I guess it depends on how flexible or how much we allow in the beginning in the land use, but most more importantly in the zoning code as to what the uses might be.
Which will be predicated on what the comp plan amendment says.
Pardon me?
Which will be predicated on what the comp plan amendment says.
Yes. Yes.
Bill?
I also think that once we have public input, it will help narrow or expand our scope as what would be allowed there. I know being a resident in that area, I'd hate to see if the airport closed it turn into a bunch of NASCAR garages sitting out there with guys running their engines night and day up and down that airport strip, because I'd be one of those people out there shooting that as they go down the airport. That would be important that you have public input to make sure we narrow that scope.
I can see that happening. It's a throwback to the days of drag races at the abandoned airport strips.
Yeah. Well, there was two Mustangs sitting out on the airport yesterday. Yeah, there were two Mustangs sitting out there, one up and down the strip.
Really? Daryl's kids used to race the bombers up and down the runway all the time.
Yeah, I got a couple of them too. The noise from those cars is pretty loud.
Yeah, it's bad enough with the racetrack. If you put them right there, right next to the housing, I'm sure you'd have some issues.
Do you keep awake at night with noise from the fairgrounds track? When I first came, that was back in May, I was here for about 3 days, and I was somewhere along US 2, and I heard this. Saw that race car that went. Whoa, where's that coming from? I had no idea that there was a racetrack on the fairgrounds. Didn't even know where the fairgrounds were at that time. service is to complete put together a complete staff report at this point and start tackling some of these issues we've talked about. And while we're on this subject, what's your thinking on when it would be good to bring the applicant in? Should we have another workshop, another session before we invite them in, or should we bring them to the next meeting that we take this on? Any thoughts?
Bill, I guess we'll start with you. Let's go down the line.
I'd like to share the question.
Jeff?
Yeah, I'm looking at the questions we're asking, and I think this one.
Dave?
If we're looking at the questions that we're asking, I think that the questions need to be put together in some manner so that they can respond to them in some degree of
ahead of time
opportunity to prepare. Because if they're just going to come in and reiterate what we already got in front of us, I'm going to ask why. I mean, to their credit, they did a pretty comprehensive checklist in that they not only responded to questions, they also provided for future information statements. So I think they really did in that process paint a pretty good job of what it is that they want to do up there. So I'm all for them coming here, but I don't want to just be a show that reiterates everything we've already heard.
I would agree. Might as well get them in and then get us that much closer to.
Okay.
That date.
So, as far as the timing of things, then, Paul, would you anticipate that will occur after you've completed the staff report, or would you use that as an opportunity to contribute toward your staff report?
Actually, I think it would be good to. To have a draft staff report, but not for formal review, and bring in the applicant with and give them ahead of time a list of issues or questions, and use that to flesh out the remainder of this report. A lot of the report is fairly straightforward. This might be give us some good ammunition to put together a fairly complete package of staff analysis. And then some kind of reaction by the commission. That's a good idea.
And the NDS will be NDS?
Yes.
That will be generated and made available concurrent with the staff report? Before we go to public hearing, we'll review it.
Oh, yes. And I'd like to get that done before we meet again.
I have a procedural question. When they come in, are you able to ask some questions, or is it only the planning commission can ask the questions?
Well, it was really the discretion of the chair to ask anyone in the audience just to speak, and I think it would certainly be appropriate to have the commission and the applicant have a conversation.
But can you personally ask them questions in this setting?
Sure.
Yeah, in our, especially because it's not a public hearing, our workshops were pretty casual and interact quite a bit with the audience. Yeah.
We need to take caution, though, that it doesn't take on the life of a public hearing.
Yeah.
The appearance of a public hearing, no.
Well, in a lot of aspects it is, but of course it's not a formal required public hearing. It's really a workshop, in my mind.
I was saying notice requirements.
Right. There would be no notice requirements for that.
No decision making.
No decision.
No, there's no action coming out of this. But I think we do need to, at some point, hold that formal public hearing prior to making our recommendation. Hopefully we'll get all the information we need before then.
One last one. If we're having an exchange with the applicant, do we need to be careful about exchange with members of the public if they happen to be here too? Or is it really whatever the commission's brothers are?
I think it's discretion of the chair.
One thing you don't want to do in a situation like this is to make any decision or make a comment
it is a legislative matter, not a question of judicial.
Well, I think the it might be useful to explain to whoever's in the audience that, that the purpose of that session is to gather information so that we can eventually make a recommendation. But tonight we're gathering information. We're talking about issues that we need more information on. But we're not going to make any. I think Wayne may be right that we don't make any reaction to specific yes or no, or tell the client that's fine, that satisfies that requirement. I don't think that's the place for that, but certainly to take the information in and query the applicant in particular.
I agree. It would be more of a not a debate.
Just a little bit different fact or aspect of this. I think we need to have every commissioner possible in this process, but Bill, I'm a little confused, I guess, and I'm not sure where we stand as far as the comment that was in the meeting within this room. If you might know where you're going to recuse yourself from this spot, and whether that your mind has changed, or I think that probably as we move through this process, we need a little more clarification on that. Yeah, I don't have a problem either way. I'd love to see you in the discussion.
I would, if it comes to a matter of where a decision has to be made, I'd rather recuse myself. But I'm happy to sit in on discussions.
Does that work, Paul? And maybe we should get some guidance from that on that question just to keep us out of trouble.
Yeah,
I don't know the answer. Actually, I'm going to be talking to Zach Mel tomorrow, so I'll ask him.
Thank you. Yeah, because he had mentioned it to me earlier. I said, well, because it's just a workshop, we're not making really any decisions or anything. I felt if he was comfortable with it, I was comfortable with it. But if we can get further clarification, it would be great.
I don't believe there's any direct financial gain based on your decision one way or the other.
No, but it's up to the airport.
Right. But it is part of it is the perception. And if people think there's a conflict of interest, then indeed there is. But I'll ask Zell about that tomorrow.
Especially about the difference of workshop versus a public hearing. I think Bill has already said that when it comes to making decisions, he will recuse himself.
Right.
As far as general discussions. Okay, if we're done with that, I'm going to bookmark this, and I guess we're moving on to rezone RC 2011-01 Roosevelt Road rezone. Signing amendment to the Wakanda has also been met.
Isn't that?
Okay, want to fly solo on this?
Rezone. Well, I think you're all done with this. Here's where we are. Highway 2 in Frylands, Roosevelt Road, coming up with her. My landlord lives right about here. This is about 71 acres and about 40 acres of that is in wetland, is in critical area. There's a fair amount of scattered development. There's a real mix of some older homes or some fairly large lots. There's at least one mobile home, some farmland, a couple of what at one time were larger farms that have shrunk down, maybe a 5-acre farmstead. And I did got a few pictures. I've been around this side and up and down Roosevelt Road. But and you'll see on a slide coming up too the relationship of the Roosevelt Ridge annexation to this property. Well, there's the basic context. The existing zoning, all of that light area, including the Roosevelt rezoning, is 9600 SR 9600. In fact, there's a mistake on the Roosevelt Ridge parcel where it says R25. It is actually R5-7 in the comprehensive plan. So as you go farther south, you can see we're pretty close to the airport in relation to that and that intersection. So it basically is surrounded by the foothills, and actually I haven't been in the foothills before now, and we're thinking there's a lot of good-sized homes in here, but pretty well-designed subdivision with park spaces and so forth, and that's going to be there's development up and down. What's trying to recall the name of this road that runs along the east edge of Roosevelt, housing that faces Roosevelt, and homes within that could certainly come, depending on how it's platted, might be accessed off of that existing road from the east. I'm assuming that road along the east side there is not separated from this Roosevelt rezoning property by 5 feet or 10 feet that would disallow any access to that street. But there are some stub outs up there.
Yeah, I was just going to say back when that was platted, a future connection to there was anticipated.
Several of them.
There are at least a couple of them that are stubbed to the west for roads.
Real quick, Paul, I have just a couple questions before we move off of this map. Roosevelt Ridge annexation, it hasn't been annexed yet, is that right?
That's correct. It's on our work plan for this year.
And if I remember correctly, I thought that was changed to R2-5 last year. Is that, am I forgetting that? Just hasn't been updated, or did that somehow get...
Well, the way I understand is when Roosevelt Ridge and Roosevelt Road were both 2010 comp plan amendments that bumped them to a 5-7 category.
Oh, that's right. So that's...
There was some... That's right, go ahead.
Yeah, you're right. That's what I was thinking. I was thinking the other way. It is a higher density than that.
I think this area was excluded from that R5-7.
Yes.
But there were at least a couple of parcels, two or three parcels within the Ridge annexation that were bumped to that R5-7 in the comp plan amendment.
The other question I had was that the foothills. So what will happen is the foothills will be at a lower density than this Roosevelt Road rezone. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's correct. Foothills is at the 9600, in the 9600 zone, as opposed to the 6000.
But wasn't it developed as a BRD
zone?
Effectively the same density as the rezone area. Because it's BRD, the effective density was the same. Somewhere in here states that the foothills and this rezone area are effectively the same density, and that probably this rezone area will end up being one or several PRDs because of all the critical areas. And that was part of the foothills, as part of getting the density to get their capacity up.
Yeah, true, sir. In terms of gross density, Roosevelt's going to be less than foothills. Net density may well be higher, but not very much.
A lot of the lots in the foothills are well under 9,600, probably most of them are lot.
Yeah. Dave, did you have a...
Well, just I can add to that, the foothills back when that PRD was done, just correct, we didn't have minimum lot size in our PRD orders, which we had. So they were able to shrink the lots down and offset where the sensitive areas that they couldn't develop. So they didn't lose as much yield out of it. And now we have in the PRD ordinance a minimum lot size that's going to ultimately dictate how many, what the yield will be. And Paul, while we're talking on this too, looking at the comp plan map on our little laptops here, we were just looking at showed for the, I think it was for the annexation there.
This is zoning.
Okay. Because the developed areas within those boundaries are not designated in our comp plan, apparently. So we haven't designated, according to this map here, the developed areas in the easterly portion and northerly portion of that annexation area. So are we anticipating annexing it without any comp plan designation?
Well, my range would be that those existing areas, say this area here, is already in that, I'm guessing may already be in that 5 to 7 range.
Certainly, the new houses there on the left side of that.
Here?
Yes, those are all half-acre lots.
Okay.
So they're not even close to 5 to 7.
Well, that has been rezoned, though, or redesignated, I think, in 2010 to the higher.
Not according to this.
I think that map.
Not all of it was redesignated.
Oh.
Anyway, that's a little off topic.
That Roosevelt Bridge is going to be coming back, and we're also going to talk about this in future agenda items, but just for your information at this point, council needs to act on this by mid-August in order to make the November election day. This is annexation by election. So we'll have to bring it to the commission pretty soon.
That's the Roosevelt Bridge.
Yes. The annexation. Full plate.
Is that just a general majority vote on that? I mean, it is only with the people that's in that area, and it'll be, is that right?
It's assessed values.
If it's on a November ballot, I would think that each voter has.
I'm not sure exactly how that works.
I don't think
I think three different methods or procedures for annexation. Election is one, and there's others that are based, I think it's a combination of assessed value and landowners, so that assessed value doesn't trump landowner or vice versa. But I'm not clear on exactly how the voting works. I would think it would need to be limited to residents of the area to be annexed. Citywide?
No, I think, well, not residents, but property owners.
Property owners.
You could have a California
right.
corporation
right.
that would give
property owner.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to read a quick comment from February of 2004. Eckelbarger, the buyer, who has developed what's there so far. The buyer reported they are still in the process with the zoning committee. The zoning committee is to be able to put between 200 and 300 more lots on this land. For the time being, they have been approved for 52 lots, those are the half-acre lots. It has not yet been determined the total amount of lots that will be approved, but the buyer did say they will be an average of 19,000 square feet per lot. I think perhaps their original intent was to somehow draw a line around these half-acre lots and get greater density on the residual land that was never built upon in the first phase and give that 200 to 300 lots. The original it was 115.86 acres in the entire purchase by Eckelbarger. You might have picked up a couple of small pieces also, but so if we have 52 lots, half-acre lots, that's 26 acres. So there's probably a residual of 80 or 90 acres out there upon which they probably want just to annex that. I don't know, but they already have septic systems and all the utilities in there. So I don't think that they would have any need for sanitary sewer service, obviously. So it may be that the scope of this thing changes. I don't know. But this goes back to,
Jeff, where did you get that? Where did I wasn't sure what that was.
That's from a CoStar comps write up.
Oh, okay.
I believe the acreage of that annexation area is 181 or 183 acres. in total? Of what's showing on the screen there?
So they put those lots on about 38, which is the same reason that 52 lots of 2 foot.
Essentially, half acre lots at 19,000. But it's pretty efficient.
I think the really key thing on this, and it's been every time this has come up, and I know we're off topic here, but access and utilities. I mean, no one has yet figured out how to accomplish that. And if you're going to annex in the city and allow city level development, you're going to have to get utilities up there. It's just crossing that right away in any place besides 179 doesn't mean it's going to happen from past discussions. So, something to keep in the back of your mind that always you start to lose.
Similar issues with the rezoning, although at a lesser scale, but some of those same issues. Well, we'll be revisiting the Roosevelt Ridge soon. Here's some pictures. The upper left is I'm headed north on Roosevelt, and this is pretty close to the southern southwest corner of the property. The next one is up. I've gone past the property to the north, and I'm looking south. That upper right. I think the northernmost corner is about halfway up the road on this line. The density drops off quite a bit as you get further north. On the left, lower left, there's a couple shots that are along that street just off the east side of the rezoning parcel. I can't remember, I think it was that White Mountain Road might be. The lower left shot from the cul-de-sac looking south, and then another shot at the south end of just past the bottom end of that slide on the left. So it gives you an idea how close this property is. The tree line is the Roosevelt property. And there's a street stub just past that stub sign. A little bit of context. So a little bit of history. This is interesting for me to do some discovery on this. Annexed in 2008, and it would have come in as R2-5 in the comp plan to match the county's zoning. And in 2010, to say along with the bridge, this property was changed to the R5-7 in the comp plan. And the commission did deny it unanimously, 6-0. Based on issues of traffic, primarily, I think, based on issues of the critical areas to some extent. But my recollection, the reading I've done, was that traffic was the biggest issue, is traffic impacts and how they would be addressed. City Council did approve it, and going through the minutes from that council meeting, there really was no indication of any discussion. There are a number of things that were approved at that meeting. These comprehensive plan amendments and some other comprehensive plan related changes.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and so forth.
Part of that denial, however, one of my concerns besides the traffic was that the majority of lots are already developed. Not all of them, but the majority of them,
right.
And most of the owners, the property owners that came in here, had no desire to move or change there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Now you can see that on the south end here, there are a number of, those are about, these are 5-acre lots on the west side, so these may be 3 or 4 acre lots up and down through here, and there are houses, including one fairly, I'll say, newer, larger house in that stretch. As you get farther north, it gets to be quite a bit less, the actual lots get to be quite a bit larger. It really leaves the southeastern quadrant of this that has not been developed, but a large part of that's in wetlands. the since council did approve the comp plan amendment, you know, the Growth Management Act requires that we rezone to match the comprehensive plan. We don't have a choice in that sense. It's not to say that we can't question, and this might be an interesting item of discussion with council, but we are on track to do something with the zoning to be consistent with the company.
Okay.
And Paul, that goes, I think, to the heart of my question here, and that is, what are we accomplishing other than just in effect procedurally rubber stamping this at this point? To what end do our questions take us if we have them?
Well, I think the questions become a part of the recommendation. And you know, since the comp plan, the same thoughts were going through my head as well. Since the comp plan has been approved, there should have been a consistent process, one would hope, from staff to commission to council. And I don't recall what staff recommended on the comp plan amendment, but council did indeed overturn the commission's action, and you know, that's the item I forgot to add to my future agenda item. I can talk about now for a second. Council wants to have a joint meeting with the commission next month, and I think that will be an opportunity to discuss this project in particular as to how rezoning and subsequent development can be done to address some of the issues that led the commission to deny it in the first place.
Okay.
So are you saying then, Paul, that we don't have any basis for recommending against the rezoning? We do have an option of suggesting that the rezoning be conditioned in some way?
Well, I don't know if conditional zoning is typically done here. In my experience, I used to do quite a bit of conditional zoning. And a lot of it comes out in the subdivision process with the development agreement, but it's predicated by zoning conditions that may restrict uses or may call for, at this point, some kind of undefined traffic improvements. But I'm not totally up on what sort of conditions can formally be adopted as a part of your rezoning.
So then I guess, going back full circle now, learning what it is that we're doing here, we're going to have a public hearing on this rezone. We get a crowd full of people, and they all say, don't do this. We say, well, we don't have any choice. We have to do it under law.
Well, we have an option, and that would be to perhaps go back to the, after listening to the citizens, to do a reverse and put this on hold and amend the comp plan back to 2-5. Do a city-initiated action in 2012 to be considered in 2013 to take it back to where it was.
So then you still have to do it.
Jeff?
Well, when I saw this paperwork, I thought perhaps, you know, I was naive. Why are we even looking at this? Because it's a done deal. And I didn't think, correct me if I'm wrong, there's a process to remand something that's been overturned by the council back to the commission. It seems to me that would be an utter waste of time to do that. Why are we even looking at this?
It's a good question. It's a quandary. Now, the commission is formulated to make recommendations on comp plan and zoning issues. And we're, in this case, you know, there's this schism between the commission and the city on this piece of property. But yet state law now says you will be consistent between these two. Now, there's I don't know that there's any kind of time limit on when that happens. But this, I think this would be an item ripe for discussion with council at the joint meeting. See, I think the question, you know, why are we
procedurally the comp plan amendment was approved by council in August 10th?
Yes.
Right, okay. Once that action occurs, then what is the statutory action that follows to rezone the property in conformance with the comprehensive plan designation approved by the council? Is the planning commission part of that process or not?
Yes, in this case it was a city-initiated rezoning based on that, I believe it was a city-initiated comp plan amendment. And that city-initiated rezoning application triggers the typical zoning process, although it's really driven in this case by the comp plan amendment, which says, rezone me.
Paul, you touched on one of the things that bothered me about this all along, that this was a city driven comp plan amendment. And I thought back then, I think today, why is the city pushing this so hard? We don't even have the property owners up here pushing for this, including the Wellington, I think it's Wellington group that owns the big chunk of this in the southeast corner. They're just trying to dump the property. They've got it for sale. They have no interest in doing it in Monroe, regardless of what it's owned at this point. So, city-driven, city-initiated, and as I look through the staff report and the application, actually, in particular on page 4, it's predicated the underlying, well, the two big paragraphs, top and bottom, and they're underlined. It's all predicated on the 2007 Snohomish County Buildable Lands Report and the deficiencies that the city of Monroe had in the way of housing units and potential lots. And that's old data at this point. We're a world away from where we were when the data was looked at to compile that report. The 2007 report was compiled over, what, 2 years prior to that, probably. And it's a different world out there. I guess what would help me, perhaps, is you're going to be talking to Attorney Lell.
Yes.
Tomorrow on another topic, I would really like to get some clarification on what options this commission has with regard to a rezone in this type of situation. Because I agree with Commissioner Sherwood. On one hand, it seems like, well, what we're doing here, other than pulling our thumbs on something, is a foregone conclusion anyway. And yet, then on the other hand, I hear that, well, gee, maybe there are some options out there, and I'm totally unclear as to what they might be.
I'd like to jump in here and say, I would like to look at our options. Commissioner Demarest has suggested finding out about our options, because quite frankly, at risk of looking like I'm trying to cause trouble, the city council looks a little different than it did a couple of years ago, and I think we might have the council maybe look at this differently now than they did a couple of years ago. As Dave pointed out, it's a different world than what it was, and unless there are others that are opposed, I wouldn't mind seeing what the council thinks about maybe. Suggested
staff person here at City Hall.
Yeah.
The
right. Engineer here.
The engineer, but
right.
Okay. But
there are some restrictions at that intersection because probably because of DOT right away and so forth. But if that opinion did come from in-house.
The people out there are complaining about whenever there's a shutdown highway too, the traffic was diverted.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't even get to the mailbox, but nothing's going to happen until the state does something, bypass or whatever, to divert that traffic. We had a situation years ago, got to get away from the subject here, where the state didn't buy a piece of property behind Albert's. And the people who owned the property came in with this no lot line development for us to approve, which we used to do in three readings. And we suggested to the state that we, you know, then we had this every time we had a meeting, which was labeled to go. And on the third final reading of the thing, an hour before the council meeting, the state called our staff and said the check was in the mail for the property, so they bought the property from the guy. So, if we can get the state of Washington bound up on something similar to this, maybe we can get them to put the bypass in too.
Well, there was a contingent of, I'm sorry, there was a contingent of DOT folks here a month ago, 6 weeks ago. They all agreed that, yes, this bypass needs to happen, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be here within, it's going to be 5, maybe more like 10 years still.
And I think they're only talking east of 522, not west.
Right. phase one.
If I could speak to the market dynamic, what happens in this situation, because I've seen it happen, you know, especially when the market ran up in, you know, peripheral areas, Kemp, Renton, Auburn, places like that. When the assessor finds out that they have a 5-7 density, the land values are going to go up, the improvement values are going to go down, but the land will go up more than the improvements go down. And so, as often happens, you know, grandma and grandpa are going to get taxed off of their property, basically. Another thing that happens is you get one little sliver of a couple acres, someone puts 8-10 houses in there. And then next door you have chickens and pigs and goats. And this condition could last for a long time. And so this is ripe for all sorts of issues.
Oh, yeah.
And I can see why the folks, apparently they came into you and said, you know, live somewhere else if you would. Okay. But that will happen. That is an inevitability, because all of this action has been taken, that's a de facto issuance of, you know, city services. And that could happen in a piecemeal fashion. And so this could get pretty weird for a while. I think those folks probably understood that, they've known people, whatever, that faced a similar situation where they got taxed to the point where, you know, it's fish cut bait.
Well, I think to further what Jeff is saying, it's especially true when the biggest land parcel in the area is 75% wetlands itself. It's clearly not going to be through the driving force of it. It's going to require someone going to put a compilation together of properties to do small plats. And of course, then can they afford to bring the sewer up for those small plats? And it's quite a distance from the sewer up there. And did you figure out today where the crest of that hill was, Paul? You and I talked briefly this morning, and I said at some point along that frontage, it goes over the crest of the hill, the crown of the hill, and starts to drop down toward the valley there.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, you should at a...
I want to say that's it's right along in this stretch here somewhere.
Okay.
We have a topo map.
Yeah.
There. It's... Okay, here's it, we're high. This is low, and it's going around. What happened to my line here?
Well, it looks like the point probably right about here comes out to a point, dropping that way. Jeff, when you agree?
Yes,
yeah.
That's about where the crest is. You can see where Dave just went. If you go east a little bit, you can see the top of a hill there, a ridge. Then it drops back down to the southeast. It drops down to the northeast, and it drains around a very broad curve to the north. And you come down into some flatlands or flatter or lower lands as you go toward the point of the triangle.
When you research this, why did the council contravene your recommendation? Was there an explanation?
I went to the minutes and didn't find any discussion from the minutes. I didn't have a chance to listen to the tape. I'm not sure what discussion there was.
Okay, I thought maybe there was something to recommend.
Completely different council.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, there was a, I don't think there was much discussion, but I would have to say that the comments you made a few moments ago about minimal development and particularly about people being taxed out of their homes. That was, I recall, a very common theme from the property owners. They were concerned that the property taxes were going to go up, but they were going to get nothing out of it because they had no desire to move or to develop that land.
And I wasn't there, as I recall, Jeff, but I think that if we just look at the language in the staff report and the emphasis on potential developable units, they would look at you and hire a vet as far as to address the shortcoming.
I was at that meeting, and that's exactly what I was growth management actions.
Yeah, it seemed like it was a effort in one way to create more density because there's a very limited amount of property there that can be developed. More than half of it's undevelopable. And then making some progress toward that target, the buildable land target. There's going to be a new round of that coming out later this year, this fall. We'll have some information come in, and I think it's going to be finalized early in 2013 with 2030 targets.
Paul, are we in a deficient situation still in regards to density and unit count?
We are, and I'm trying to recall the number. I won't say it because I don't want you to quote me, but we do have a pretty significant shortage of units projections based on land.
Dave?
From the 2007 report?
Yes.
Which had certain projections that have now kind of gone out the window.
What are the potential ramifications to the city if we don't get up to the projections that the state has laid down for us?
Well, I think there's this back and forth between infill or development within city limits and in urban growth areas, and it's in my mind has got to be key as to whether Monroe will be able to expand its urban growth area. And I'm guessing that if Monroe has a fair amount of developable land, vacant land, that could possibly have increases in density, then that's going to happen first, or at least some movement toward that, in order to be before the urban growth area is expanded. The West Main project should address that to some extent, to help close that gap.
So, I have two quick questions. Are there funding ramifications if you don't get up to the density that's been prescribed for you? Do you know the answer to that?
I mean, is that driving the council?
I don't think so. I'm not sure what funding might be affected.
The second question is, as staff, can you say, you know, a better place to put 40, 50, 70 units is over here? You can hit it with gravity sewer, the services, the level of service at the, you know, impacted intersections, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something we could bring to the council, you know, in this joint meeting as an alternative and say, would you consider putting the density, displacing it somewhere else?
The answer is yes, and that's a large part of what's going to happen in this comprehensive plan update. Part of that effort is going to be in looking at the land uses that we have and where is it, does it make sense to grow within city limits? You know, where does it make, like West Main, you know, where does it make sense to think about increasing density because there is concurrency, because there is infrastructure, there's decent access, and where are the areas like this or like East Monroe that are not readily or very feebly suitable for development, which should be kept at a low density. That's part of the exercise.
If we bring this up because it's land back in our lap, because of, you know, the rezone issue, and they could be proved to have some alternative, say, better here than here.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And all the citizen, you know, pushback on this, it would seem to me that would be politically prudent.
Unfortunately, we won't have an answer to that anytime soon.
And it would be a practical thing regarding access, utilities, local service at Route 2 in Roosevelt and so on.
One of the things that we did was, of course, this Main Street corridor. And I know there was a deficiency within the city limits of Monroe in that report in 07, but the majority of it was in the urban growth area. And I don't know if we've ever been given what the new numbers are for the density within the city limits, if we have now met that or even possibly exceeded it with this Main Street. My guess is we may have at least met it, if not exceeded it, and that may be something to reevaluate. I'd like to see where, you know, I think that's a great point, see where we're at with that 07 report, and I have a strong feeling that possibly the council will see the reality that that number may change the next go around, and to put a burden on people from outdated information without really, as far as we know, I don't think that I recall hearing that there's any sort of financial ramifications against the city for not meeting this in a certain amount of time.
The densities of these, growth management act that I have, has probably changed since the growth management act has been enacted, because right now, how many houses are, I don't know if anybody knows this, are empty in Monroe? A lot of them. I know about 3, 4, 5 of them in my block around my shop that are empty right now. My son's place up on the top of the hill, there's a whole bunch of empty ones up there. So I don't know whether we need the density or not with the empty houses around the street. Of course, people lost their houses financing. It'd be something to look into.
Yeah. Dave?
I think the challenge, though, is that it's not so much a matter of today what the status is as far as billable lands. It's what the projections are for 2025. And when this report was put together based on 2005-2006 data, they had projections for Snohomish County, including all the cities in the county, that are very much different from the reality today. And obviously, if there's a change in that projection, there's going to be a change in our needs. We had a deficiency in the report of 2,519 person shortfall in residential capacity. What do we figure, 2.5, 2.3 persons per household?
believe it's 2.3.
So that's 100 houses, basically. We were short 100 houses. We didn't have West Main Street in 2007. What we have now in the way of potential zoning there. We didn't have the infill ordinance that we have now for the existing city.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are going to be some significant changes. I think making decisions today based on this report and driving up density solely because of that report, it's just it's flawed.
This would bring about 50 additional units over the 9,600 zoning, which would be what?
52 units. Half of the shortfall.
Half of the shortfall. Well,
and where I see where I have the problem with that is we're just creating a number. That's all we're doing. We're not creating homes because I don't see this turning into homes anytime soon. And that's something that needs to be considered.
The challenge with West Main is that it's we have this mixed use zone which accommodates commercial, residential, so forth. Is it making some kind of assumption about how much of this would be residential and what density? We have a pretty good variance on what the range of what some potential densities might be. We could kill that deficiency very easily if we assume a fairly high level of density. But what are real possibilities and what's practical? And nothing's going to happen there for some time either. It all comes down to urban growth area. If Monroe wants to expand its boundaries, we have to somehow be able to justify that.
We have to use up what we already have.
Right.
That's not happening tomorrow.
We'll be going through this whole allotment process over the next several months between cities and the county.
You're re-evaluating all the coming up with new numbers, is that what I understand? So there's going to be a new report here in another year.
It's going to be a year and a half. We'll have a new version of buildable lands. Right.
Which may say we've got plenty.
And yeah.
Who knows?
Maybe.
Dave?
I think it goes back to the question for attorney. Well, what are the options this commission has? Given that this is in front of us and it's supposed to be done by the second quarter, or during the second quarter, maybe the time frame, what are the options? We don't know that. I don't know before. Other than to rubber stamp it.
Once I find some things out, I'll put together a memo and send it to the commission rather than wait till the next meeting.
Great. Thank you. Dave?
And I haven't touched on the transportation, but I will with my last comment. Walmart appears to be moving forward. That's going to have a significant impact on Highway 2 traffic coming from the west into the borough, almost certainly. This intersection is going to be hugely impacted by that. And Engineer Maggie Inahara's letter back, or memo back in April 2010, is so true. It just we're creating the moment.
She says if Route 2 increases in volume, then they're going to have to hold the Route 2 green longer, which will exacerbate the Roosevelt side of the intersection. And I think we've already seen that happen.
Apparently now the level of service at the PM peak already drops to some level of E from D. And it may not be far to a level F. If what you say happens, that the green continues to have to go longer to handle the primary traffic.
Not to mention that one of the other complaints that I think was already brought up tonight, but that the property owners had a real problem with was if there's any issue on Highway 2 as far as traffic backing up, everybody goes screaming through that road
mm-hmm.
to get around it. So, Dave?
I can't help myself with one comment. I think we're failing our duties if we lose sight of our current residents. And if we do something, allow something to go forward, they're reckless to go forward at that intersection, the impact it has on the foothills and those folks who've been up there for however many years now paying taxes in the city. You know, at some point you got to say, well, what's fair? I'll stop.
Thank you, Dave. So is it fair to say, if I may ask, commissioners, that we'd like to be able to address the council with this since we're having a joint meeting? Bill?
I agree.
Jeff?
Yes.
Dave?
Sure, but I want to hear from the attorney first.
Yeah.
Okay. Wayne? Yeah, me too. So, great.
We have a meeting scheduled, what, 2 weeks from now, and there was some discussion of the possibility of meeting with the commission in early February,
okay,
which would
with the county
be the commission's, essentially, your first meeting in February. So we need some answers before then. But I will send out some information in the interim, and then we'll talk about this maybe in more detail. In fact, maybe we should make an agenda item, a discussion of the joint meeting with council as a item to come up with some strategy and some thoughts about what we want to talk about.
Okay, our regularly scheduled meeting is the 13th, which is the second Monday. So would that be the 14th then that we would meet with council? Is that what?
I'm not sure what the schedule of business versus study sessions is. Most likely be a study session. I don't have a date. It's still circling. But the initial thought was early February, meaning first half.
Dave, did you have a...
Well, I was just looking at the calendar as well. We have a next regularly scheduled meeting for us. It's on the 23rd. Are we still doing that?
Oh,
this one or January? Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So then the meeting with the council probably would be in place of one of our meetings, or just...
I don't know.
With
the kind of time frame we're on, we may not have that luxury. Much as I'd like to have that luxury.
Okay.
So the joint meeting, we just had a joint meeting with the council not too long ago.
For the docket.
For the docket.
Primarily for the docket. And the docket and the work program.
What's the objective of this meeting then?
To have some... I had a short conversation with the mayor the other day. The mayor actually wants the council to meet with all of the boards and commissions. And in the setting of the planning commission, I think the mayor's interest is in having the council have some discussion with the commission about where each group is headed, or to see if there's some common ground on what our vision is for this city, or what sort of issues we emphasize versus council. Because obviously there are some differences on some of these projects. And I think in part it's for council to tell the commission what they're thinking is, where they're headed. That doesn't mean that whatever direction they might offer, you need to follow, because this group, I think, needs to remain an independent group that evaluates projects on their own merits in the eyes of this commission. And council will do what it will.
Real quick, before I go any further for Dave on this, the 24th of January, I doubt we would meet as a joint session, but I will be in Alaska that Tuesday night. So,
going back, Paul, just to your comment there as far as independent thought and independent action. We exist under state statute and local statute or ordinance as well. We have the right to be, is autonomous the word I'm looking for? Independent as a commission under the law? There's nothing that says we have to. Let me rephrase it. Can the council say you will do this over this?
I would say no.
Okay.
Your mission and purpose is outlined in the zoning code, and that is to review and advise council. And you know, this commission really is about what, comp plan amendments, zoning actions, and conditional use permits, I think. I think that's the extent of your scope of review. But
I've never seen a conditional use permit come through.
Maybe it hasn't been one.
Not a long time.
There is a third. There is a third action. I think that the commission, and I believe it's a CUP, and I believe that is an action, not a recommendation. It only goes to council upon appeal.
No, the conditional uses go to the hearing examiner.
Oh,
yeah.
Do you remember what the third item is for?
No, I was trying to think of it, but I don't remember.
Our duties are set forth in RCW 3563 and Chapter 2.32 of the Monroe Municipal Code. So I guess I need to read those.
Yeah, well, what are you waiting for?
It's been a long time since I've looked at it.
Well, if I understand correctly, especially based on this particular Roosevelt Road history, since the Planning Commission unanimously declined it and the City Council approved it, we can come up with any vote we want. I suppose we could say that we don't recommend a zoning change and that we recommend changing the land use designation. Doesn't mean the City Council has to want. It has to do what we want.
Right. The commission could make a recommendation that this be reconsidered and taken back. And then there would be either an action on the council's part to say, we disagree, we're going to approve this, or they would say, okay, we'll just go back. And I'm not sure how it came about that the city did initiate this back in 2009. I mean, it would have been mid-2009 that the comp plan amendment was begun or submitted, and I'm not sure what the situation and the politics and the thinking was at that time that led to this, other than the buildable shortage, and there may be other factors that somehow brought this about. This is an up zoning, not a down zoning. Because there's no state law in Washington regarding property takings in that sense, like there is in Oregon and Arizona and other places. But I wish I knew a little bit more of the real history behind this, as to how that came about. And the neighbors apparently are, many of the landowners apparently are not too happy with this.
They weren't, in my recollection, with me.
We can pass over some of this, and when we're ready, we can go on to manage report. But I will get some information together, and we'll come back together on this project.
I just remembered what the third thing was. Plats.
What?
The PRDs and plats, yeah.
Oh.
It goes through them.
Not anymore, does it?
Yeah.
It goes to hearings later, too.
No. The plats?
Yeah.
Oh,
no. Those come to you. I'm pretty, no?
It's, no, plats go to the hearings
later. WCIA
sure
took this out of that.
Wow. The sure plats are administrative now, so.
Well, it's the comprehensive plan. It's rezoning. Were those the two things you said? Comprehensive plan,
yeah.
Rezoning.
Right.
The third, isn't it? Code cleanup,
oh,
that kind of stuff.
Code amendments
under zoning.
Oh, really?
I think I swear there's another process, or some kind of a permit or something that's in your bailiwick.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, well, with that, I think we're done with that, so I think we're just moving on to discussion by commissioners and staff. Is that right? Paul, anything?
Yes. Future agendas or future agenda items. We have these two comp plan amendments, first air at East Monroe, and East Monroe, I did receive a packet from Lowell Anderson. Jefferson with a updated letter and a packet of information for each of you for future reference. A lot of this information you've already seen, but he sent this and we made copies and pass those out tonight. First here, I'm going to talk with the applicant and plan on bringing the applicant back to our next meeting and trying to, I can go through and pull some of the issues we talked about tonight to provide the applicant so that they can address some of these things, and you'll see the sooner the better. And I think immediately after that, the sooner the better for a neighborhood meeting of some kind. Now, East Monroe, I've got some work to do to, I want to meet with the DOT and do some other research on this to get this back before the commission. Brad is working on this phase environmental impact statement. I'd like to get that completed as soon as possible, within the next few weeks at least, to bring forward. And the question there is, we can concentrate on one for, say, a few meetings and then concentrate on the other, or we can try and bring them together, perhaps not simultaneously all the time, but bring these amendments, keep moving each one along as we go. The target is to get these things completed and handed off to council by, May, something like that, which I think is pretty ambitious. But nonetheless, that's our target. And there are several other things coming along as well. This rezoning project. We have the Roosevelt Ridge annexation, which really does need to be out of the commission's hands by, probably June or early July at the latest. And the zoning code revisions, there are a couple of minor things that I want to bring to the next meeting. The airport overlay notice, when that overlay zone was adopted back in 2006. Part of the ordinance says that every 5 years you will notify every property owner in that zone, that overlay district or area, of this code, of the airport compatibility code, including providing them with a copy of this code. And this has to be sent out by March. We came up with our list of property owners within that area. We thought it was like 2,100, which means we would have to package up and mail out about 6,000 or 7,000 pages worth of information. So I want to bring back the zoning code to revise that ordinance to say that we don't have to give them the entire code, but we'll give them some basic information via postcard to give us some relief from having to send out 6,000 or 7,000 pages. I mean, the cost would be tremendous. So that's one thing. And then another one that has come up, the side yard setback in the mixed-use zone on West Main. Apparently, at one time at least, the other zones are 5 foot minimum, and I think perhaps a 15-foot total between the two side yards, the 5 minimum, and the mixed-use zones were adopted as a 10-foot side yard. And we've had a couple of people that have some serious heartache with that, since under the former zoning it was 5 foot. And they'd like us to consider changing that so that it's not a 10-foot minimum, which would in fact match, I think, most of the zoning categories.
I'm thinking back, this has a lot to do with West Main Street.
Yes.
Was there some aspect of that that said if you're going to be next to a different use, then it's 10 feet? And we're just next
There was some requirements for related to number of stories. And I don't think it kicked in until it was maybe the third or fourth story that there had to be additional setbacks. And it may have had something to do with what the neighboring use was or is. So there may need to be some tinkering to qualify based on number of stories. To say anything more than two story may need to kick into something like a minimum 10 as opposed to a one story structure. And it may have something to do with the use as well. Of course, in the mixed use zone, we're trying to accommodate together, either horizontally and hopefully and vertically, residential and commercial.
And I think one of the concerns was that if we have an existing single family residence in that zone, didn't want to see a three story block wall 5 feet across the driveway.
Right.
Want a little bit more space for those unique uses.
Right.
Yeah, and if I recall correctly, it was for sure in one of those areas where if you had a different zoning, the setback was larger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it works the other way too, in that there's been one or two single family home owners who want to do something and are having problems with the 10 foot setback because they got limited side yard area. So it works both ways, but there might be a good way to protect this, give the single family homes the opportunity to do an expansion or accessory building and protect them from having based on a certain height or number of stories, structure that's too close. It's got to be, at least 10 feet away. So it may take a little bit of finagling to find the right language for that, so that it works for both ways.
How about existing buildings already there before the zoning?
Well, they all have to conform to the mixed-use requirements. Existing buildings, right? If you want to expand or change or redevelop anything, you have to conform to that. Because a lot of those houses are, I'm trying to remember now. There was a lot of discussion with council about non-conforming uses. And there was a difference between the West District and the East District in terms of the level of protection for existing single family homes. Less protection in the West half. So
we didn't want to make those existing homes non-conforming.
Right. Right.
Because of the penalty they suffered if they become non-conforming. So we created an exception that was in there, we put in there. It would preserve their status as being conforming status.
Right.
And I think what you're referring to is the condition that said if a residential property was converted to commercial or mixed use, it couldn't be converted back after a certain period of time.
And we also stipulated that an existing single-family home that was destroyed can be built back to its original mass and footprint.
Right.
It would not be precluded from being replaced.
Protecting in refinance situations if they want some banks.
Right.
So you're going to look at that then, you're going to look at the setback situation and come to us with some
try to come to the next meeting with some suggestions.
Great.
Definitely the airport overlay. We don't want to spend thousands of dollars on postage and paper and staff time.
For paper, they probably won't get read anyway.
Going back to that, Paul, do we have some flexibility on the time frame when that has to go up? Or is that being looked at as being pretty rigid by the city?
It's within 90 days of December 31st, so end of March.
Can we get that done by the end of March, procedurally?
Yes.
Two public hearings?
Even if we...
one here, one there?
I think so. And the council can declare emergency and waive a second or third reading.
Would that... notice provide a great opportunity for notice about First Airfield and its proposed
down of a postcard.
It's going to be a big postcard.
It might be possible.
Yeah.
Especially if the applicant agreed to cover extra costs to do it in a letter format, two pieces of paper, one related to the airport overlay zone that affects your property as an owner within this district, and the other being the comp plan proposal.
Sounds like a great thing to split the costs with the
applicant.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Either that or we can make the font really small and do it all in postcard.
Anything else?
We talked about the joint meeting with council. I think that's about it.
Okay. Wayne, anything?
Nothing.
Bill?
Nothing.
Jeff? Dave?
Paul, you and I talked briefly one day a couple weeks ago about whether the city of Monroe has any requirements in the comp plan amendment for a socioeconomic review of the proposal. And near as I can tell, we don't. And yet it's not unheard of in Washington State. And it's something apparently, while not a required element of the Growth Management Act and comprehensive planning, it is an optional element. Duval, for instance, has it. Every comp plan amendment they get in, they do some sort of socioeconomic analysis of that proposal. And it's, I guess it's fair to say, it's kind of loosey-goosey, because you've got a lot of subjectivity in it. Maybe you've seen this, Jeff.
Well, that was mentioned in the first area.
A socioeconomic impact for analysis. And I'm just thinking, you know, is it maybe something, and maybe we should talk about it with the city council, or maybe it should be brought up there and looked at. Because we get all these projects that are coming forward that are involving comp plan amendments and other sorts of things. And it seems that that would provide an opportunity for perhaps somewhat of a little bit more subjective analysis of changes in the direction of the city might go.
But would staff be charged with that, because we do not have necessarily the expertise to do that sort of feasibility?
I would imagine that it would be, if it's a city initiated, the city would be charged with it. If it's a citizen initiated amendment, it would be just like at least most all other comp plan amendments and the associated documents, it would be the applicant's responsibility.
What kind of information does it provide?
And I'm not an expert on any of these, but from the little bit I've seen and read about it, it looks at economic pluses and minuses of a proposal for a city. It looks at social pluses and minuses and the way it impacts for a city. Like I said, kind of that software sort of stuff. It's not based in, you know, state sense of regulations or city regulations. It's more getting into that sort of, where does the city want to go? Is this the sort of thing that's going to be good for the city?
There's two problems with it. One is that it's amorphous, and the second is that you're putting the box in with the chickens. Because it's city initiated, they're saying this is the best thing from their standpoint. Or if the applicant comes in, just like we heard, you know, when folks came in on first air, this is a really good thing for the city. How to make it more objective, so to get to what your point is, you know, can we quantify how much dough is going to come in the coffers? Something like that. Will people be displaced? Will houses have more noise? Whatever. And I think that we look at, from what I've seen already, most of that already.
Well, I think it's still worthy of perhaps looking at what Duval, for instance, has done. Great resource down there. I think you can call up Laura and she has something in your inbox within hours or at least a couple of days.
Especially overdue for a lunch date.
There you go. There you go.
I mean, if she could provide a checklist or something like that, then
we'd
never be
starting. Laura was on my mind just yesterday. It's time that we got together. So, give me another reason.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
But I would comment that I don't believe that the city, in evaluating the feasibility of whether or not the project can be built. The city doesn't do pro forma to determine that it is a feasible project and will make me 30% return on my money. I could do that because I did it for a long time, but the city cannot take that responsibility or liability to make that determination as a part of a project review process. It's got to be based on the environmental, the compatibility, the so on and so forth, but not the, you know, like East Monroe. I look at it and I think, wow, I don't know how this project could possibly be economically feasible to develop because there's so much upfront cost for a finite piece of ground. It's offset by the fact that it's a tremendous location. You know, never mind some of the other development issues, but the location itself at the intersection of Highway 2 and the bypass. Oh, I'd jump at that for a hotel and a restaurant. But we can't make that judgment like that. No, you can't do this because you can't afford it. That's not our call.
But I think we have already incorporated some of this in our comprehensive planning process. And then, for instance, Monroe, we don't have a heavy industrial zone to speak of, except for a few very limited options. We're not looking for any more heavy industrial development in this town because that's not a socioeconomic model that we want to follow.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to have a smelter, for instance. And it goes to where you want to see your city go.
Mm-hmm.
I think in that regard, it would be worth looking at.
Those are more subjective value judgments that could certainly be part of the process.
Comprehensive planning in a lot of ways is a judgment.
It is. Very subjective.
Process. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you. I do have a question. I don't know all the details, but obviously there's been some comments made regarding the court case regarding Walmart. What are the next steps for the Walmart project at this point, do you know?
Well, Walmart has an approved site plan. They actually they had a binding site plan, and they submitted another slightly revised plan, I would say, a couple months ago, which was approved. And at this point, they have not submitted building plans of any sort, and they've not submitted for any building permits or site grading permits or whatever. But I would imagine that would be the next step now that they have approval to go ahead. And I guess I'm pretty doubtful that there would be any appeal because apparently if the Friends decided to appeal this decision, if it were upheld at the next level court, the Friends would be responsible for all legal costs from the beginning of the case, which is a pretty significant amount of money. And I'm not sure if there's any basis for an appeal in the first place, but Walmart's next step is to submit building plans and seek a grading permit and start site construction. It could happen fairly quickly.
Sure.
I assume they want to be open by Christmas. They have a lot of dirt to move and a lot of work to do. The building itself is probably the least complicated part of it.
Seconded by Commissioner Demarest. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye.